This morning's opening bell at the New York Stock Exchange rang in what may become the biggest initial public offering or IPO in U.S. history. The Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba's U.S. stock offering opened this morning at $98 a share. That's 38% higher than its original expected price. The company is expected to raise at least $21 billion in this offering, knocking Visa out of the top spot as the biggest U.S. IPO ever. Well, it raises some fundamental questions like who, what, and is this going to affect us down the road? With us now is Chris Farrell. He's economics editor at Marketplace Money and economics correspondent for Marketplace. He's also a contributing economics editor at Business Week magazine. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Well, first, who and what is Alibaba?
So Alibaba is the founder. He founded 15 years ago out of an apartment in China. Is an internet company that creates marketplaces. So it matches buyers and sellers. And the total transactions over its websites last year was, what, about $250 billion. Just to put that in context, for Amazon, it's about $116 billion.
Wow. And so this company, as I understand it, is a little bit Amazon, a little bit eBay, and a whole lot of other stuff, too.
Yes, it is. And I think eBay is the right analogy because what eBay does is eBay is an auction market, but it's matching buyers and sellers. That's a lot what Alibaba does because its profit margins, I mean, this is kind of pretty amazing. Its profit margin is about 40%. So it doesn't actually, you know, own the stuff that it's selling, competing in the retail business. It's bringing together the buyers and the sellers and taking a piece of the action. So this reflects the power of the consumer in China and the rise of the consumer in China. And it's also a good business model that I think we're going to be seeing some competition here in the U.S.
And the founder of the company, as you said, he started it in his apartment. He's a former English teacher. He rang the bell on Wall Street. This has been all over the news. Why are we so excited about this initial offering here?
You know, I think this is one of those bright letter days in history that will stand out for a long period of time. So if we're thinking about the digital universe, the digital economy, do you remember it was back in 1995 in August, Netscape. Remember Netscape?
Oh, yeah.
It went public, and the stock went way up. And the thing is, you know, what that signaled, and that was really the beginning of the dot-com boom, what it signaled to corporate America was that there were enormous commercial possibilities in the internet. And it also signaled to every entrepreneur out there that was in the high-tech world that this is where we're going to put our money, this is where we're going to put our brain power. Now you look at what Alibaba has done. It's created enormous wealth in China. It's got 6,000 employees and shareholders. They've got a lot of wealth. And I think this really signals that the entrepreneurial high-tech sector of China is growing rapidly. It has been growing rapidly. It's like a public statement that they're on the world stage. And therefore, this digital economy is going to grow a lot faster from a global perspective. It's going to grow a lot faster. It's going to be a lot deeper and a lot more competitive than it was pre-IPO.
Yeah, you know, you hear the story, they started in a garage or the back
right.
room or whatever, and they ended up being billionaires. You could attach a lot of American names to that high-tech story. Are we going to see more and more Chinese names having that story told?
We absolutely are. And the city of Huangshe, which is where Alibaba is based and where it was founded, it's becoming an entrepreneurial hotspot. And there's a university there that is kind of a feeder into all this high-tech entrepreneurialism. And then you have a number of other Chinese companies, you know, that are laying down the gauntlet that, you know, they're going to be going after some of the markets that Cisco's in and that IBM is in. And so I do think this signals the beginning of a new stage of increased competition, sophisticated competition in the high-tech sector, and much more global. And Silicon Valley will remain important, but Silicon Valley over the next 10 years will probably not be as important as it was as their other parts of the economy become like it.
Now, most of us aren't probably buying Alibaba stock today, but is there going to be a time not far down the road when instead of going to Amazon to buy something or to a brick-and-mortar store or their website or eBay, we're going to be doing something that Alibaba at least partly owns here
in
the U.S.?
I sure hope so. And that seems to be the plan. I mean, that was part of what the money that they're raising with this IPO, initial public offering. And yes, they're very interested in expanding into the U.S. and is going to increase their options. And I think it's really going to provide, if they do move more into the U.S., you know, provide some real options for small entrepreneurs to have a really viable digital presence. They're very strong in Brazil, for example. They have a very big presence in South America. They're coming here, and Amazon's going to have increased competition.
Now, among the many wacky things that makes the economy hard to understand, we've been hearing in the news that
there are quite a few of those.
There's a lot of them. We're hearing Yahoo is making a lot of money because they own a lot of the stock. I know Alibaba, I guess, owns some or all of companies like Lyft, so some things that are more familiar names in the U.S. It's hard to know, just watching from the outside, where one company begins and the other ends, even when we're talking about American and Chinese companies.
Well, that's absolutely right. And that, you know, that really is the story of companies and globalization. Because if you go and you buy a Honda car, you know, most of it is made. In fact, we are now exporting from the Honda plant in Ohio, we're exporting to the rest of the world Honda cars. And if you look at that Honda car and you look underneath the hood, the Honda car is largely made in America, but it's also got parts coming from Germany and parts coming from Japan. I mean, it's a global product, even though it has this label Honda. And you've hit on, I think, a really important thing. I think, you know, people are buying pieces of each other. It's all kind of mixed in together. And, you know, Alibaba has its own payment system, Alipay, just like eBay has PayPal. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a lot of what is going on, except for what we do know is that as consumers, I think the consumer is a true beneficiary, that this will provide more options and more prospects for some cheaper prices. And from the entrepreneurial point of view, again, I think this just adds to the entrepreneurial prospects from a global perspective.
Okay. You point toward a positive benefit for consumers, more competition, going to drive down prices for us maybe in the short run. Or is this going to be an even bigger fish that drives out the large fish, and ultimately the markets are going to get more concentrated and we're going to have fewer options on buying stuff?
Well, you know, there is in the high-tech markets, there's the sort of first-mover advantage and the network advantage. So if you look at a company like Alibaba, which has grown to be this enormous presence, there have been other internet-based companies in China, but they've gotten so big that now everyone turns to them. And so you do see that effect, and it definitely is something that goes on in the high-tech world. I think you've hit on something extremely important. It's farther down the line. However, it's something that we really do have to keep a close eye on, that even though there are lots of names out there, how much beneath the surface is there consolidation going on, and is there a little bit of monopoly pricing power going on? But I think over the next, 10 years, that's probably not going to be the story, but that is something to really keep an eye on.
I'm going to end with kind of an old-fashioned concept of a national economy. We used to be big manufacturers. We had, a lot of tough competition from China and elsewhere. Information for a long time has been our distinctive product here in the United States. Now, there's this big Chinese technology company that's taking that over. Is there anything that we do here in the U.S. that still has a competitive advantage that someone else can't duplicate and do better?
I don't think you can. Once you add in can't duplicate and do better, I don't think so. I think that there's no reason, there's nothing in our DNA here that says that we are going to do it better than other people. What we do have is an edge that we are still open to entrepreneurship, and we are more open than many societies to allowing for innovation and then figure out how to deal with it later on with the downside. So that is a real strength, and we have an incredible education system, and we have a pretty good feeder system between innovative companies and the education system. But from a global perspective, if we don't improve our overall education system, and if we don't raise the incomes of the bottom half of society, we can no longer rely on just say, well, we're the most innovative, we're the most creative, we'll come up with the new ideas, let other people make it. That no longer is going to work. You're going to have to be, your human capital investments have got to pay off throughout an economy, not just a 10%.
Chris, you always make economics fun and comprehensible. Thank you for joining us again.
Thanks a lot.
That's Chris Farrell. He's Marketplace Money's economics editor, also a contributing economics editor at Business Week magazine.